Oh, I love this place. Man, this is one of the greatest places to play. I mean, right off the top, it's beautiful. And, I mean, this year the weather's fantastic, right? You know, so just physically it's a great place to be. And Claude Knobs is, you know, is really built this festival up to be a major. I mean, this is one of the major festivals of the world. And it's great to come here and see such a wide variety of music, you know, is performed here. And I mean, it's just all in all, it's one of the better experiences of being on the road. It's something that I look forward to every year. I'm always sad that it's over. Well, one of the pieces, the ballad, is on the new album, Another Hand. The song called First Song, which is also the first song on the record. And Charlie is actually going to be doing the second half of the tour, starting at the end of July. And we, you know, it's kind of part of doing some of his music as well, you know. I just felt that it was a good tune to open with Sandino, you know. And I always liked that tune when he did it with the Liberation Music Orchestra. You know, so that's it.
Your new album is going back to jazz roots. Why?
Well, you think it's a jazz album? I don't think it's a jazz album. Well, it's acoustic music.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in that sense, people would probably identify it more as a jazz record. But I don't think it's a. See, I don't think of myself as a jazz player, and to me, it's not a jazz record. I mean, there's a couple of tunes on it that are definitely more jazz-like than others. I wouldn't really call it a jazz record, you know. I think the context, the acoustic context, makes it much different. For me, it was kind of a matter of not wanting to do another record with electric instruments in the kind of funk context, you know, the funk R&B thing, you know, where people, you know, where the drummer plays a certain way and the bass player plays a certain kind of pattern and the, you know, guitar player plays a pattern. And just kind of, you react in a certain way to that music, you know, and it's dance music, basically. And also the level of intensity is generally much higher on that that music. So as a player, you tend to kind of play, saxophone players tend to play more kind of accentuating the brass aspect of the instrument at the expense of the woodwind, the warmer quality. And you leave different kind of spaces with R&B music. You know, you don't leave the same kind of spaces. It generally can be more repetitive, you know, although it doesn't have to be. The good stuff isn't. But that's the idea, is to create a groove. And in this kind of music, you know, that's on this record, I think, you know, right away the dynamics are changed when you have acoustic bass in the ensemble. And if you have acoustic piano in there, you're bringing the dynamics down, and you're allowing, you know, for me, I'm able to play in that kind of mezzo piano to piano range and bring out the more woodwind, warmer quality of the instrument and leave different kinds of spaces and react to the band much differently, you know.
You are taking an acoustic option. Do you think that music in the future will take this option, more acoustic?
No, I don't necessarily, you know, I don't think that it's ever going to, you know, once a sound is introduced into the people's ears, it's not going to disappear. I don't think, you know, electric music is going to go away, or it should. I mean, synthesizers are great tools. They're great instruments. They are instruments, you know. And I mean, I love funk R&B music. I don't, you know, I have no, you know, I haven't grown tired of it. I just wanted to do a different record for now, because I was feeling that what I was doing, for me, if I had made another record like the one I had made prior, Close Up, that I would just be repetitive, too repetitive, and I wasn't getting anything back from that music for a minute, in my own case, you know, with my own music, I wasn't able to get enough back emotionally from it. And I wanted to change the context, you know, not only the sonic context, which I spoke about earlier, but also just the emotional side of it. I wanted to create much more range for myself. But I don't think that means I'm going to abandon electric instruments, you know. But I'll certainly use a lot of the things that I learned on this record for the next record too. Nothing is more important than another human life. I mean, I listen to African music. I listen to, you know, I mean, African music, that's a pretty broad category. You know, I listen to music from Senegal, from Central Africa, from, you know, there's so many different kinds of music from Africa. I mean, the music of coastal Africa is much different than the music from, you know, it's in the interior of Africa. It's much, you know, there's so much variety. So, I mean, you mean, will I do a record like what Paul Simon did? I don't know. That's really hard to say. I mean, I don't have any plans to do that. I'd rather, you know, try to more, you know, bring elements of whatever the music is, whatever the ethnic source of the music is to my music, you know. I mean, Latin stuff is accessible to me because I live in New York City. And there's a lot of Latin music in New York City. And it's exciting, and there's, I mean, rhythmically, it's great. You know, I mean, and it's dance music, and you can improvise to it. You know, it has hip, like chord changes. You know, Latin music is very sophisticated, rhythmically and harmonically. You know. I think the saxophone and the voice are very closely related. There's a real vocal human quality to the instrument, and I think that's because the reed is a very complex vibration, and like I think that. It's been said that the tenor saxophone is closest to the human voice of all the instruments, probably tenor saxophone and cello. And the kind of players that I always related to had that real vocal singing quality to their playing. And those include, you know, the great obvious ones like Charlie Parker and Cannonball Adderley and Phil Woods, and players like Hank Crawford, you know, Jimmy Forrest, Gene Ammons, oh man, Ornette Coleman, you know, people that really had a very unique, distinctive kind of cry to their sounds, you know. I think that the saxophone and the voice, you know, are very closely related.
Have you ever tried to sing?
Oh man, I'm a terrible singer. I actually sang on one record that is mercifully out of print now. It's called Promise Me the Moon, and I sang on one tune. I'm glad you can't hear it.
You've been voted several times as the most influential sax player in the 70s and 80s. I guess you don't like it.
I know
that.
No, I don't like that at all. I don't think that, you know, that's a difficult thing for me to respond to because there's so many kind of levels to that are uncomfortable for me. See, I think what I do is fairly obvious. You know, it doesn't take a lot of, it doesn't take a long time to understand what I'm doing. It's pretty fucking superficial and, you know, and obvious. I mean, I have a certain kind of sound and a certain kind of style, you know, way of phrasing and stuff, but I'm certainly not an innovator. You know, I mean, and there's a lot of people that are playing today that are real innovators and that I think are more worthy of study by younger saxophone players than I am. And that's not copping a false humility thing. It's just a fact. I mean, you know, Sonny Rollins is still alive. He's probably one of the greatest living saxophone players, if not the greatest living saxophonist. Wayne Shorter, Ornette Coleman, you know, the obvious, you know, the older players, Phil Woods, Benny Carter is 82 years old and still playing great. You know, and then there's a lot of young players, like guys like Steve Coleman, Kenny Garrett. You know, these guys are you know, major players, and I think that, you know, because I've been operating in the kind of R&B funk pop mode for a long time, and that maybe a lot of people have heard me play, and you know, maybe young players like relate to it. emotionally, and I appreciate that. But you know, if they, you know, if they're gonna, I would hope that they would really spend more time, you know, listening and understanding and trying to get some, spend some time studying the real great players, the innovators. I mean, because what I do is just, you know, is easy. It's not, I mean, there's nothing to it, you know? And, it, you know, it doesn't have a lot of, it just doesn't take a long time to figure it out. I mean, the comparison I always like to draw is like, for example, like, let's say you compare the music of James Brown and the music of Sonny Rollins. Now, James Brown, you don't have to spend a lot of time studying that music to understand it. It doesn't make it any less valid as music. It certainly is powerful and visceral and goes right to the point. But you don't have to spend a lot of time like studying what he's doing, you know. You know what I mean? As a player. Whereas, I'm talking about as a saxophone player, but as, you know, you can spend a lot of time studying what Sonny Rollins does. So, I mean, I would hope that young players would, you know.
Not listen to you.
Well, no, no. I mean, obviously I want as many people to listen to me as they can, but, you know, if they're, and I appreciate if they want to sound like me, but I would hope that they wouldn't stop with me.